welcome to Cruel Classics for February 25th, 2023. The show where we play highlights of Adam Carolla's 14-year podcasting history. We did it. Yeah, Adam celebrated his 14-year anniversary this week, so happy anniversary, my friend. All right, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Chris Loxamana. I'm the executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show, and with me, as always, Carolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
Oh, hoy hoy, Chris. I was very impressed with your stats that you dug up and those clips of Richard Belzer you recovered.
I know. I did it so easily by myself, yeah.
No. I was always listening. I'm like, oh, no, they're trying to Brian and Gina me. Why don't you love me anymore, Chris? No. Why don't you love me?
Gio, I thank you for digging up those clips, especially that radio clip of Richard Belzer.
I didn't even dig them up. They're just sitting there.
We listened to it, and I was thinking, like, would I Am Your Emotional Support Animal, one of Adam's books, be a book? Would, like, it's one of Adam's most classic rants, and we kind of just had we listened to the birth of it.
And it was just a random thing on the morning show. It was a second. He's like, he's sticking around for the news, and it just kind of came up at the beginning. It's like, oh. Yeah. And then you can hear Adam's almost doing that vocally, the thing he does at the airport with his camera, and he wants to take pictures of somebody's dog. He's like vocally, like, leading. He's like, yeah. Tell me more about this, Mr. Belzer.
Well, rest in peace, Richard Belzer. As I said, it was a stirring tribute by Adam, in a way. But we'll hear more from him.
Actually, his best interviews on air are that short radio interview and his podcast appearance. He got a lot of stuff out he never talked about any other place besides with Adam, in addition to the pet stuff. It's a really interesting career of a complicated man.
I agree, and we'll hear more from Richard in a little bit. But first, let's get going with our first clip. This is from 2013, and it is a listener request. And by the way, if you want to write a listener request or submit one, email classics@adamcarolla.com or find Gio or myself on Instagram, Facebook, whatever. Let us know what you want to hear. We're happy to look for it.
Found me on Instagram.
Oh, see? This is from Aaron Blank. He writes, Gio, I have a classic request. Can you please play the bit where Adam combines the Neptune Society with a deep sea sport fishing boat? All I can recall, aside from laughing hysterically and almost running off the road, was, quote, a defrocked priest who you don't have to ask twice for a cold one. Thanks. Keep up the good work. Well, Aaron, that clip is from 2013.
Yeah, it's what's the Skippernet heat bit from the old days at Acme. They've gone over that recently with, like, John McCann coming in and all that stuff and going over, like, really in-depth that I never thought they would cover. But this is from a while ago. This is from back in 2013. Jim Jefferies with a guest, Adam Carolla Show 991, Allison Rosen, Brian Bishop, January of 2013. And Adam goes right to the bit. He describes in great detail, and he actually even plays the Crank Acres clip. I think it's exactly what you want, Aaron.
People always give the, what are you saying that for? And then I realize, why are you giving me a fucking earful of what you don't like about me? And why don't I tell you to fuck off? And then, by the way, if family members, in-laws, and the rest of society, the guy behind the counter at the Starbucks, you know what I mean? We all turn into this sponge, but it's a sponge that doesn't absorb anything. We just never squeeze anything back at you, which is like, you know, the guy behind the counter at the Starbucks got to hear the, you know, this sometimes the skim milk and the 3% is, I don't know the difference between skim and non-fat, and they're not clearly labeled, and that guy just does the head knocking, you know,
he's the head,
yes, ma'am, okay, well, we'll see what we can do, and then she leaves, and then he goes, a fucking crazy product, but here's what I'm saying, if more people, including family members and strangers, went, hey, you old nutbag, fuck off, I think she would straighten her act out.
Oh, her family members.
Yeah, like she would stop approaching people with a long list of things they needed to correct about themselves if they just went, fuck off.
Yeah, the people who are surrounding her are not curbing her correctly.
That's right.
Oh, I'm a big
off
fan
and
of
no
that.
Pictures.
Back when I was more of a club act and, you know, I had to answer to more bosses as a comedian in the sense that when you finish a show, if you told someone to fuck off, then the club owner would go, why did you tell someone to fuck off? But now that I sort of do more theaters and stuff like that, I don't fuck around, man. If you're one of these people who heckled and fine, you heckled, whatever, if you keep hanging. If you're one of these people that afterwards comes up and goes, I was the guy who heckled.
Right.
That
right.
was me. I was the guy. And expect me to go, that's great. You were part of the show. I do. I just fuck off.
You got to do the math, too, which is your instinct is to take the one crazy woman who probably will never put a penny in your bank account.
No.
Like, she's not buying your books. Mm. She's not subscribing to your anything. She's not even going to watch your comedy special, Fully Functional, on Epics. She's not going to do any of that. So, A, she's a non-supporter.
Like, when is she not watching that?
Well, that's it's on demand at the moment.
It's on demand.
Yeah,
she'll never demand.
She's not watching it anytime.
Yeah,
she'll never summon it.
She wouldn't have an on demand bit on it. She'd have basic cable.
That's right. Yeah. On her best day, so she is not going to give you a nickel, and you're not going to change her mind because she's crazy. So why burn calories trying to fucking bring her to the light when you can just quickly tell her to fuck off, have a little satisfaction in it? And by the way, who cares? She has no influence over anyone. She's not like, oh, that she runs HBO. You just doomed yourself.
Was she familiar with you and your comedy and what you say?
Or
was
she just stumble
based
in?
Just on Las Vegas?
I don't know. At my grandfather's wake, not funeral because that costs money, but at the party we threw in honor of him dying at my grandmother's house 2 years after he passed away.
Is that someone who was liked?
Yeah.
Yeah. No one's going to remember me 2 years later.
We sat there, and I sat next to one of my grandmother's batty, you know, I'm 80. I can say anything I want to anybody at any time, friends.
I love it when they
and
drop the end on the old people.
I saw you on television the other night. And you talked about defecating for 25 minutes. And I said, I'm sure I made a fart joke. Maybe it was on MTV. I did not talk about defecating for 25 minutes. And then there's this part where you go, what channel? What show? What are you talking about? Last night? You were talking about MTV? I don't recall. They never fucking know. They live in some fucking universe where I just talk about defecation for 20. I don't know, but you talk for 25 minutes about, and I said, listen, I may have made a joke about it. I may have made a fart joke or poo-poo joke. Maybe it was on MTV. I guarantee it wasn't 25 minutes. They don't go that long between commercial breaks.
Maybe they did a clip show of you.
And the guy, it was a compilation best of shit show with Adam Carolla. The defecation hour with Adam Carolla. Hi, I'm Mark DiCarlo. I'm hosting this hour dedicated to scat comedian Adam Carolla about defecation. So I just said, look, by the way, I was sort of doing the head move where it's like grandma's talking about grandpa right now. So it's doing that over there, you know, like in the movie theater when someone's talking to you and you give them at the screen.
Like, here, yeah.
And 25 minutes. And I was like, her name was Hank Gale, by the way. I hope she's dead. I said,
my son's name's Hank.
Yeah.
I just had a son.
Well, look forward to a nice defecation discussion with him. And I said, it wasn't 25 minutes. I guarantee you that. I may have brought it up. I'm sorry if it offended. 20, like, would not let it go, but again, could not tell me what station, what, where, who was next. You know, these people too, where you go, okay, was Dr. Drew next to me? Who was I? Was Jimmy next to me? Where were we on? And they go, I don't recall that. How do you recall so specifically what I was talking about in the length of period of time, but you have no idea where I was or what other human being was with me
she
on stage?
She may have made the whole lot up.
It's just good form when you go to a funeral of someone's grandfather or wake of someone's grandfather accused them of talking about defecation.
Have you seen the TV show Best Funeral Ever?
No, but if it involves black people throwing themselves in the grave.
Yeah.
I'm in.
It's a tremendous program, and you got it. What it is it's black people, I think mostly in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy who puts on the best funerals ever, right? So there's one that was like a boxing-themed one where they all went into a boxing ring dressed in the cloaks and that type of stuff, and they rang the bell before everyone got to speak.
Right.
And then there was the guy who sang the I Want My Baby Back, Baby Back, Baby Back rib song for Chili's. Yeah, right?
We are talking about black folk now, yeah, I guess.
he died.
He died?
Yeah, he's dead.
He'll be missed.
Yeah, he'll be missed. Right? And what they did for him was they carried down these big, like, Fred Flintstone-sized ribs. You know when Fred Flintstone had the ribs put on the top of his car?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Dinosaur ribs.
They carried down some Brontosaurus burger ribs down the thing. And then they made all the morning family. They had like one of those chocolate fountains.
Yeah.
With barbecue sauce coming out of it, and everybody, like it was Body of Christ, dipped a rib in it.
Wow.
Ate off the rib and then cried and wept and said, Jesus, please, all that type of stuff.
I want that. I've said many times, I've said to my wife, listen, if I go early, hire some black folk to pad.
Well, see, I haven't lived here my whole life. This is a new experience for me. My girlfriend was like, no, that's what they do.
I didn't. This is an experience for me. I didn't know that we have themed funerals.
No.
But I better get planning.
This is a celebration of life. And then the guy's up there going, and when he said, whenever I go into Chili's, I think, I want my baby back ribs. And everyone starts crying, hallelujah, like that. It's fucking mental.
Now, listen, I just said black the second he said funeral, but I didn't know it was going to go this black. I didn't know it was going to be
extra black.
Well, they bring in ringers as well, like you were saying. They bring
That's what I want.
They bring in the woman who jumps after the coffin and drags along.
That's what
and,
I want. Yeah. I don't want any. I know, but
what's
listen.
The betting process?
If
can
we
you cry
can,
on
if
you
we can see the jump? Knee pads underneath your slacks, that means you're not good at your job. You
it's
know?
Not
I don't
real
want to
crying
see that.
Though. It's wailing. Anyone yeah, can wail on cue. Anyone can go oh, bow like that. Anyone can do that. But crying's harder.
The I laugh with my wife all the time because the Corollas aren't a demonstrative group, you know, and right. I don't want my mom up there going. A lot of people. I guess thought he was clever. I don't. I didn't see that.
How would I know
side
that?
Of him? But he, will be missed by some.
My mother's such a martyr.
Few of us here as well, I suppose.
That she's already chosen all of her music for a funeral.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's all ready to go.
What'd she choose? Do you know,
she wants what me or one of her other sons. I have two older brothers. She wants one of us to get up there and sing "Wind Beneath My Wings," which is
really
the height of asshole. Really, to have a song that you make your son sing, where it goes, "It must have been cold there in my shadow, and I'd be nothing without you."
Oh wow! Oh,
she can go get fucked if she has that song. Once she's dead, she has no choice.
You know
in the
what you do?
I'm not fucking singing that song.
You do. You do Alice Cooper's own. Only Women Bleed. That is Alice Cooper.
Yeah. The other one she wants is You Lift Me Up, which I think is... You lift me up so I can stand
Jesus
a mountain.
Christ. Does she want to hire some black ringers? Let me tell you, there is a white funeral that is almost equivalent of it. It's a little bit cooler. The white guy surf funeral.
Where
you all paddle out. You know what I mean? And you spread the rose petals and dump the ashes out in the Bay of Maui or whatever. Everyone's on a longboard. Like, that's the way he would have wanted it.
It's strange you should bring this up. My best friend died in a car accident when I was 16, as kids do, you know, die in car accidents. If you're going to die in a car accident, normally 16 is when it happens.
Right.
And so he died. He was also a surfer living in Australia and all type of stuff. And I hate the beach, but he used to surf every morning at this beach. So his parents said if we could go spread the ashes out in this beach. So we swam out there holding this bag of ashes above our heads. So he's three of his mates and his brother, right? Mm-hmm. So 3 16-year-old lads and a 13-year-old boy. And we swam out there. And then we waded out in the water at 6 in the morning. In a circle, and we had a little cry, which is hard for boys of that age to do in front of each other.
Sure.
And we said goodbye to Nick, and then we all reached in the bag and tore it, and then we're fucking covered in ashes.
Wind kicked up, all wet.
No, it was just the water. We were in the water, just coated. Coated. So from this beautiful moment where we all walked out and his family stood on the beach and all cried, we all ran back screaming like small girls.
Sure.
So my friend Nick Dykeel, I think most of him is down the shower at that beach is where he really ended.
That's why I opt for the Chum Slicker Remembrance. Brings up some world-class trophy fish, you know what I mean? As long as you're going to dump him, go fishing. It was always one of my favorite bits when I used to be at the Acme Theater was this guy, John McCann.
I went into politics.
He did a bit. It was funny. Maybe I was the only one who knew it, but my grandparents were in the Neptune Society, and everyone in my family was in the Neptune Society.
Well, you have to explain that.
It's a $185 funeral. You die. They come pick you up, and they throw you in the ocean.
Sure.
And they do this thing, and he did this bit, which was a monologue, where he addressed the audience as if they were there for his seminar, and he was Skipper Ned Heem. And it was Adventure Burials, which was like you could go to the Neptune Society and just come home with a cargo hold full of grief or something, or you could go with me, which is we'll do the same thing the Neptune Society does. We'll cremate your loved one's ashes. We'll spread it out over the open sea. But after that, we're going sport fishing. It was really funny. He said, my first mate, Gus, he's a defrocked Jesuit. He'll be down below playing Chariots of Fire on the hornpipe while I'm topside looking out for Record School of Perch and Bonita.
Chariots of Fire, is that a funeral song?
I think it would fit. Yeah. It would fit. And he said, Gus is a good man. Gus will rig your drag line, dry your tears, and he doesn't have to be told twice to crack you a cold one.
Is it the fish go for it? Do they all come up for the ashes? Is that part?
Well, that's what reminded me of it. He said at a certain point, he said, you know, maybe this loved one wasn't such a loved one. Maybe just a business partner who died owing you money or screwed you over some way, in which case you could opt for the chum slick of remembrance, pulling up world-class trophy fish. And it was just the funniest thing where – but it was sort of made sense. Like, as long as you're going out on the boat, as long as you're heading out in the bay, and that's kind of I remember there was a bit – oh, maybe it's a Crank Yankers bit. We'd have to find it. I did a Crank Yankers bit based on that where I called a, like, Neptune Society-type place, and I said, listen, I had a father-in-law passed away, and I just want to – bring them out and, you know, go to the, well, how much would that cost and that kind of stuff. And then I would pause and I said, is there a bait shop or anything near the boat? And they'd be like, well, sir, you're not planning on fishing, are you, off the boat? And I was like, no, absolutely. That would be disrespectful. I'll bring my rig, you know, just in case, you know. And the guy's like, we absolutely would not condone any kind of, you cannot bring any fishing equipment on the Neptune Society boat. We go out, we spread the ashes, we have a priest say a few words, we'll scatter some rose petals. And then I was like, oh yeah, no, fine, there's no problem. But do they have a live bait tank on the boat or not? And the guy just kept, he wouldn't let it go, and I wouldn't let go. We'll dig it up one of these days. I don't know if we can find that.
I find this a lot in America is those adverts for, have you prepared for your funeral, right?
Yeah.
Put this $1 a day or whatever.
It's safe to say no.
Yeah. But what happens if you haven't? And you don't have any loved ones. This is not just fucking bodies lying around the hospital they're not getting rid of until they get some cash, right? They just...
Right.
Everyone gets disposed of, right?
Well, yes. I think what they need to do for those of us who will not prepare... What they
But it scares old people because they're thinking, your family will be responsible. Fuck, they can just walk away, right?
There's a couple things. I'm an atheist, so I think you should, you know, like you can sell your blood and sell your semen, I think you should be able to sell your body for stunt work.
Sure.
Like, because we've all seen the guy fall off the bridge, but it's the dummy that falls off the bridge.
Yes,
the knee's bent in a weird direction. Like,
I'd be up for that.
Yeah, where you just go, look, instead of... I mean, like, when this guy gets shot, that's not going to be fake blood. Or when the guy goes off the cliff in the car, that's going to be a human being in that car. Or, again, falls off the 20-story tower and lands on the sidewalk. You could put an extra, you know, $5,000 in your kids' pockets if you sold your body to stunt work.
You can sell it to science, so why not to stunt work?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, in terms of watching movies, it'd be pretty damn realistic.
Yeah, it would.
When you said selling your cum or semen or whatever, I've been thinking about
or
this.
Or to snuff porn.
What's that?
Snuff porn.
What does snuff porn mean?
Don't play stupid. Don't bullshit a bullshitter, Jim.
What? Snuff porn. I was thinking, yes. Yes, I know what snuff porn is.
Your country's number one export. Come on. Don't play stupid.
But with this selling semen, so I have a lesbian friend who's considering having a child. And I was joking around with her because she was going to get some donated semen. And I said, well, I've just had a kid, you know. I know my stuff works. Right. I can help you out. I'm a pretty successful guy, you know. I'm like, check my kid out. It's good looking.
Right.
Right. And then she was like, no. I'd rather get it from one of the banks because – all the donated sperm, you can check, they're all educated people, they're all people that are professionals. Those have got to be fucking lies.
Right.
Why is that person selling his semen?
What guy who's a high-end professor is fucking going in there for $40 to drop a load? right?
That's a good point.
It's got to be just the biggest... I've been poor when I was at university and stuff. It's got to be just the biggest stoner or a heroin addict or whatever who needs $40 to donate.
Yeah,
It's a lot on your mind to know that there's kids that are yours that you'll never meet. It's a heavy weight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you must really need $40 to be able to go come in a cup.
I think some of those guys... Like, here's the whole thing. If the guy did win the Nobel Peace Prize for science, and if, in fact, he's on the Harvard faculty, and if he is 6'3 and has piercing blue eyes, then he has a narcissistic disorder.
Yes.
Because he's only doing this so that his perfect seed, his Dolph Lundgren-esque seed, could be – and that's some seed I would purchase, by the way.
I'd drink it just for the protein.
Them or the Klitsch. I'd fucking shoot it. I'd mainline it. I'd grind it up and snort it. Or I'd mainline it. But either way.
It'll break you.
Put on your gums.
That jizz will break you. I'd go for that or some Klitschko jizz anytime.
Just rub it on your gums.
Yeah, just get a freeze. The point is that guy has a narcissistic imbalance, in which case your kid may be smart and good looking, but should be a supreme narcissist if they're passing all the genes along. All right.
In that clip from 2013, a listener request from Aaron Blank. Thank you for that request.
Blank with an E.
Yeah. All right. For our second clip, we're going to go back to the first year of the podcast, 2009, and hear from the late Richard Belzer.
Adam Carolla Show 172, Richard Belzer in studio. This is part one from October of 2009. We'll be playing part two tomorrow in the Carolla Classics feed. Make sure you're subscribed to the separate Carolla Classics feed so you get both episodes every weekend. And you'll be able to hear part two of this fantastic interview. Check it out.
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Welcome, Richard Belzer, to the show.
Thank you.
Good to see you, Richard.
Great to see you.
You know, it's nice. Bob Schimmel was in here couple days ago, and Bob was talking about being on stage and dealing with the audience and starting out. And he just said, apropos to nothing, he said, Richard Belzer is the best at handling that crowd.
Yeah, when I started out in the early 70s, I got the job as MC at Catch a Rising Star, which meant I had to go on at from 9 at night to 2, 3 in the morning. And, you know, it would start out, you know, the room would be full, and then, like, by 1, 2 in the morning, there'd be 12, 11 people there. And, you know, after introducing 10, 15, 20, 25 acts, I only had so much material in those days. So I got rid of my material in the first third of the night,
right?
And then I had forced to ad lib, and that's my style anyway, is just riffing,
right?
So it got to be the thing. And there was a joke around the club where people would time how long it took me to bring up the next act,
right?
And one night this guy, this comedian, was waiting to go on, and I did an hour and 45 minute set. I improvised for an hour and 45 and I kept starting to introduce him. I said, and now, and then I would do something, you know. And that was the record for an introduction.
Was he pissed?
Well, he was like four times, but it got to be such a marathon that he finally relented and, you know, that bell.
Went in with the joke.
Yeah. Plus, I would have banned him from the club forever anyway.
Plus, and then I guess people start getting drunk.
Yeah.
And the mood changes.
Right, right.
As I've noticed... Here's what you want to do, and you want to treat booze sort of like you treat a hot tub or a cold pool. You don't want to just jump into it when it's 140 degrees. You want to get into it when it's about 85 and have it slowly bring your balls up to 140 degrees. When you jump in, it's painful.
Right.
And
it's a good analogy.
Because of my schedule, I work doing late night radio for a million years, over 10 years doing Loveline. So once in a while, there'd be a party or an event or whatever. Like, we'd do the Man Show rap party, and it'd be on a Wednesday night at some big, some billiards club or something. And I would literally have to show up at 12:30.
Oh, man.
But by the time I showed up, everyone was shit-faced.
So I was the only sober guy there. Now, I quickly got drunk, don't get me wrong, right. or high or
but
both.
But still, you saw the...
But it's like diving into that hot tub. When you show up at 8:30 at 9 and start tilting them with everyone,
right.
by 12:30, you're just as drunk as they are, and everything seems fine. When you walk into a bunch of drunken people and you just got off work...
It's like another planet.
Yeah, it's a horrible experience. So I don't know if you drank back then or you drank
at
all.
I did everything then. And that's a good point, because in the 70s, there was no AIDS. People wore Coke spoons around their neck, served it openly. I was at a party at a very famous designer's house, who will go unnamed, with a silver tray with Coke on it, just passing it around. And these are like major celebrities. So in those days, you know, if I was on at 1 a.m, I was whacked out of my skull, so I could really, if someone was drunk, I would eviscerate, you know, it was like, but if a comic came in from doing another show and he was, you know, not drunk, and, you know, what you say is true, people walk into it, it's like, like you're walking into a bar fight, you know.
Well, also, you being on Coke and then being drunk is like one guy being on a Quaalude and you being on steroids. I mean, you're going to kick the shit out of him.
That's true. I mean, in all fairness.
It's unfair. It's a performance-enhancing drug.
Yeah, and people don't realize that, you know, comedians and people like us, we like to talk. And when we did Coke in those days, it made us talk more. So if you're funny and when you talk and you're funny, if you talk more, chances are you're going to be funnier more.
Yeah.
And that's why all the comics were doing Coke. Virtually.
I mean, seriously, in a weird
sense,
it was absolutely, if you look at it this way, if an athlete makes his living with his body and steroids are performance enhancing because it helps your body, and a comic makes his living with his mouth and his tongue, then putting something in his nose, in a weird way, is performance enhancing.
It's true.
I don't think it's going to be great over the long haul.
No.
But for 20 minutes set, Robin Williams squeezing, you know, an hour and a half into 14 minutes is not a bad set.
Yeah, stealing 14 minutes from one comic and turning into 90 minutes of his own.
Well, who are the notorious stealers of jokes?
Well, the thing about stealing jokes, and I'm sure you're aware of this, is that when in the 70s, when comedy was just exploding, and me and Richard Lewis and Jay and Letterman and all these, you know, we're all starting out. If a comedian came into a club and I'll give you a classic example. In the 70s, I was emceeing at Catch. Bill Cosby walks in. Wow, Bill Cosby. He sat in the back the whole night. Between acts, I'd sit with him. He was very gracious, very nice, talking the whole night. I used to do a bit about this southern guy on this front porch seeing a flying saucer. So I said, what are you doing in town, Bill? He said, I'm doing an album. I said, oh, great. My album comes out about 2 months later. Mm-hmm. There's a bit on there about a southern guy seeing a UFO.
Right.
Another time, comedy writers would come in and catch, watch the show, and then sketches would appear.
Right.
Similar to the stand-up routine.
Right.
But there's cases of, you know, people getting beat up for stealing jokes.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're not that known and the famous comic steals your joke and then you do the joke, oh, that's so-and-so. You know what I mean? That's Cosby's joke. That's Robin's joke.
Sure.
But it's not.
Yeah. It's your joke, but no one knows who you are and everyone knows who they are.
You can't copyright it. So it's a particularly egregious crime to steal a joke.
You know, it's a lot like when somebody shits up a bathroom at a party and then you walk into the bathroom next, shut the door and go, oh, God damn, oh, and you open the door to leave like I can't take it and there's a hot chick standing there. And she's going in, and you're going, no, I didn't.
It wasn't.
That was Bill Cosby who shit up that. That was Robin Williams who dropped the dumped in there. That wasn't. But you can't have the conversation. So
my shit.
It's not my shit. Yeah. So in a weird way, I mean, you know, it happens. It happens with songs. I mean, it happened with blues singers and Elvis and stuff like that.
I think that's a little different because a lot of musicians, you know, quote old poe. I mean, even Dylan would take, you know, an old poem and we rework it. But literally, word for word, you know, that's ballsy.
Yeah. Well, and again, I always wonder, you know, as I go through life and as I learn more and study the human condition, I wonder what people think when they're doing what they're doing. Because I just don't think people think I'm a bad person or I'm stealing this from this other person. Do you know what I'm saying? I think that, first off, I think there's a lot of this. I think there's a lot of through osmosis. They hear things. It registers in their mind as, I like this. And then 10 minutes later, they're talking about it. And they're essentially ripping the person off. But it's almost, they almost don't know it. I went, it's not quite Cosby ripping off your old guy in the South seeing the UFO. But just the way the human mind works. Right. I went to like a Starbucks with a friend of mine a year or so ago. Mm-hmm. And then when we were walking back to the office kind of thing from the Starbucks, he was humming a song like Midnight Confessions by In My Midnight Confession. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not the Guess Who, but I'll figure out who it is. The Grassroots. Right. And I said to him, you know why you're humming that song? And he said, I like this song. And I said, yeah, but do you know why you're humming it? And he said, no. I mean, I like it. I said, it was being played at the Starbucks. Right. He said, no, it wasn't. I said, yeah, I could hear it just barely. Right. Maybe the Muzak
underscoring
version, not over the being drowned out by the espresso machine. But that's what was being played. Now you're humming it. You don't even know why you're humming
that's
it.
Right.
This is why you're humming it.
That's right.
It, on some level, it seeped into your brain. And I'm asking you, and you're looking me straight in the eye going, you're nuts. I didn't hear it. I'm saying I heard it, I know why you're doing it.
Yeah.
So I think people steal jokes sometimes that way. Not all the time. Sometimes they just out and out rip them off. But other times they just sit around and go, that's funny. And then a week later, they magically think they think of the same funny thing.
I agree with you. I think that's true. And what's frightening about how impressionable people are is look what's happened to our country when, particularly in the last, during the Bush presidency, these guys are masters at manipulating fear and emotion. And by repeating the same things over and over again, as absurd as they seem, like with the healthcare thing, you know, death panels and Obama's this and that, some people are now believe that, even though it's patently absurd and not true. It's through repetition, suggestion. It's the oldest thing in the world.
You know, you don't have to do anything other than somebody has to say, Mama Cass Elliot choked on a ham sandwich, and now it just becomes knowledge at a certain point.
Right.
When she, you know, died of other causes or other reasons. She was a drug addict. Dr. Drew was on here explaining it couple of weeks ago, but once it gets out there, it's just out, and that's
right.
That's it.
Right.
And if you stop your average person on the street and ask them how Mama Cass died, they're going to say choked on a sandwich.
Right.
And that's her legacy. And it's sadly, and I would argue she, you know, when they do that thing where they go, he died doing what he loved.
She died doing what she loved.
What she loved. I always make the argument, how in love was he at that time with mountain climbing or parasailing or whatever he did? I bet you at that moment he fucking hated whatever you claimed he loved. which case, I guess for me, I'll die beating off. I'm trying to think whenever somebody says he died doing what he loved.
Right, right.
I'm not sure. But either way, once it's out, it's out. And then that's kind of it. Once the lie or the exaggeration right. or the misinformation is put out there, then
right.
it's Clinton, put out there.
Clinton blowjob.
Right. And also,
what, he's raised billions of dollars over the, you know what I mean?
It sadly happens in sports. You know, Bill Buckner was a great baseball player. He was a great player.
He had to move to where, like South Dakota or something?
He had to move to the place where like Mary Kay Letourneau's husband had to move. Like there should just be an island of misfit toys for
like
guys.
The prisoner, remember the prisoner? Everyone to that island.
Yeah, maybe we'll do French Guiana and you go to Devil's Island. We'll go with like Colonel Dreyfus and the rest of the crew.
Let's quickly make a list of who could be on it.
Well, I will tell you personally, Monica Lewinsky's dad needs him. Once they started calling a blowjob a Lewinsky, that's when dad had to move there.
Wow.
But if you're Mary Kay Letourneau's husband, you know what I mean? Like when it becomes, you know, front page, when it's a front page story that your wife is banging a guy who's a 10th grader, the joke's, you're the one who's,
you are the joke.
You're the joke. She's a criminal. The 10th grader's...
She's kind of hot. You know, they say, oh, she's kind of hot.
Right. The 10th grader's a hero.
Right.
And you're the guy who can't satisfy an adult woman and needs a freshman to do
a
your...
10-year-old kid. Needs
a 10th grader to do your bidding for you, you know? So, yeah, I'm trying to think on that island. I mean, well...
Octomom, I guess.
Octomom could move there. Mackenzie Phillips could probably be the den mother over there. That is a little insane that I was 19 and this thing went on for 11 years. And
kind of gleefully talking about it.
I was enjoyed it at times. I mean, you want to talk about balls. I don't know if women have them, but labias.
What a labia
majora on that bitch.
Yeah.
I mean, that you're... You know, normally there's a lot of, I was drunk, I was 12, I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
He pulled a Roman Polanski on me, he gave me a Quaalude.
Right.
Not, I was 18, it went on until I was almost 30, and yeah, I enjoyed it.
Was it that long?
It was 11 years.
And someone else said, yeah, it's true, and it wasn't bad. Like, didn't someone else, like her sister or something?
It's always funny when there are people nearby, and they're sort of like, well, we knew what was going on, but who it was none of our business.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like the guy put a funky color on the fascia of the house next door, you know. It's his property, it's none of my business. Look, if he likes cobalt blue, that's his business. This is someone needs to pipe up. Plus, you know what's sad? I'll tell you the real sad part. I hate to admit it, but the worst, the biggest loser is all of us. Because I have a daughter. And everyone who has a daughter now has to have that one fleeting thought. Wonder what that... No. I mean, like, I know this sounds... I don't want to make myself sound like a criminal or a pedophile, but what I'm saying is when anytime someone brings up something...
Right.
Like, somebody goes... you see a guy with a missing finger, and you go, what happened? And you go, I got it caught in a press. You, for one second, you have to feel it, and you have to think it. Like, what if my pinky got caught in a press? And then I think, oh, shit, that would hurt. When the guy goes, yeah, he was fucking his daughter for 11 years, there's one millisecond where I look at my daughter, and I go, what? You know what I mean?
Well,
I'm forced to think that way.
Well, this is what civilization is.
God damn, I hope my wife's not listening.
No, both of my daughters.
Because I'm giving it to my son.
Well, that's different.
Yeah.
They can handle it.
He's kind of asking for it. Those shorts are riding pretty high on that kid.
And when he writes a book later, you know,
listen,
bad.
Any press is good press.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I...
You have daughters.
No, what you're saying is... If people didn't have those thoughts, they'd be really weird. This is what the brain...
Right.
We process information. Like, you know, I'm sure most people have stood on the edge of a high building what would it be like to... You know, some people want to jump. They know they shouldn't.
Right.
So this is the brain. You know, we're still primitive. We still have one foot in the cave.
Yet you can't bring up something without...
Things.
No, I mean, listen, I've wrestled, you know, my son's 3 and a half. I've wrestled with him, had him on top of me, been wrestling, started to get a boner. Just because something was rubbing up against that area.
It wasn't sexual.
No, it wasn't.
No.
It wasn't, but I mean,
another person.
Someone's knee is rubbing my groin, and I don't know what to do.
Well, no, we're animals.
Thank you.
We are animals.
Thank you.
And no one seems to remember that.
I try to explain
we're
that
animals.
To people all the
men
time.
Men are dogs. Most men are dogs.
Yes.
Fuck anything that moves.
Yes.
You know, and so it's like...
And women
have
are
a full-time job beating us off.
And they're sniping at each other. I love the fact that, you know, women just don't get along. They all hate... You know, everyone in The View hates each other, you know. I mean, I love it that it's encoded into men to go out and fuck anything that's not nailed down. And it's encoded into women to look at every other woman to nest. And to look at every woman as competition.
Yeah.
And snipe. Yeah.
That's got to be biology. Let me just go back for a second to
sure.
the... in my act, I used to do a bit about Roman Polanski at the time of the thing. And I did a Nicholson thing. I said, you know, Nicholson had to testify. And, you know, Judge, I wasn't there. I lent him the house. He gave her... He told her he'd make her a star. He gave her half a loot. And he fucked her young brains out. I wasn't there, Judge. You know, right. Something like that was the bit, right? So Nicholson was in the audience that night.
When I did that?
When it happened, 78. Right. I was opening for Warren Zevon at that club on Sunset Boulevard. Famous rock club. That's
not, like the Roxy or the Gazzaris or something like that.
So
you were opening for Warren Zevon.
Yeah, I went on tour with
him.
Wow. Them. Yeah, we went on tour in 78 and we did clubs around the country. And then the album came out, Werewolves of London.
Right.
And it did well, so we went right back on tour to a bigger venue. So we were on the road for weeks on end, you know, drinking vodka in the morning and taking Quaaludes and bawling waitresses.
Yeah.
And, you know, no, it was like no, those days were the greatest.
I like Excitable
Boy. I mean, I couldn't do it again.
Myself,
what?
But, I like Excitable Boy.
He was a great writer.
I like that song. But, so you're out on tour with Warren Zevon. You're doing
Jack comes backstage, mm-hmm. and the owner of the club says, Jack Nicholson says, oh, shit. I didn't know what he was going to say, right?
Right.
He comes backstage, and I'm standing there with Warren, and Jack comes over and leans over in my ear, and he says, I closed my eyes, and I thought it was me.
So he had that sense of humor about it.
Exactly. And then he said, how you doing, Warren? And Warren said, when I get out there, he said, just got to get that piano in your hands, don't you, buddy? He was cool. It's Jack.
Yeah, he's Jack. And I guess Angelica Houston was there at the time, by
the
way, at the house, who Jack was dating at the time, and sort of walked in and walked out and that kind of stuff, but didn't walk in. He wasn't balls deep, as they say in the trade.
What I heard was that he was balling the mother.
Oh, really?
And the daughter, and then he had the thing with the daughter, and the mother heard the daughter bragging about it on the phone, and the mother turned him in.
The mother heard the daughter bragging about it or talking about it on the phone with her boyfriend, I think.
Something like that. The mother overheard it.
Yeah, her boyfriend. That's a weird...
guess what I did last night?
Hey, you ever see Rosemary's Baby? Where's this conversation going? I just got done. I mean, that must have been, unless her boyfriend was 29. I mean, that must have been a weird conversation for a 13 or 14-year-old boy.
She was probably bragging.
Well, she was.
I don't know.
I shouldn't say she was.
I don't know.
She was, according to whatever the court testimony and what have you, she was somewhat traumatized by it. There's no way. By the way, this is why you can't molest. You can't tell. I mean, I remember when you were a kid. I remember, when I was a kid, I told my buddy Teddy Lewis, we found a Playboy in a dumpster.
Right.
And I said to him, I said, oh, my God, look at this. Yeah. It's like I held it up held up the young
Torah.
Lion cub.
All right.
In Lion King, like shafts of light came down and hit me and angels. I heard sirens singing. So I was like, Daddy, this is awesome. And my dad was going to give us a ride back to his house in Van Nuys. So I was like, Teddy, fold this thing into, origami and shove it down your pants, and then we'll get over to your dad's house.
Right.
And once we get out of my dad's car, we'll bust it open.
Right.
And we were sitting in my dad's VW Bug going to Van Nuys, and I looked in the back seat, and Teddy had it out and was looking at it like a guy was on the toilet, was reading the sports page, And I was like, what the, Teddy, trying to kick him in the shin kind of thing. And I realized kids are just horrible at keeping secrets keeping things like
exactly.
So this whole thing, whether you're a director or whether you're just a pervert uncle, you go at a 12 or 13 year old and go, don't tell mommy. Don't tell mommy means
tell
mommy. I mean, you're better off saying tell mommy. At least there's a chance maybe you get a rebellious kid.
I was raised and born in the Briar Patch. Do you know that? From Walt Disney?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not gonna work.
No.
And now
a 13 year old girl, I mean, and I can't believe that, all these big directors and Hollywood people are saying, let him go, let him... He drugged and fucked the 13-year-old girl in the ass. I mean, come on, I don't care how great a director he is.
I don't care.
And he's a great director.
Well, what does one have to do with the other?
Yeah, right.
I mean, Well, O.J. was gained 2,000 yards in a season, right. And then he stabbed somebody. You know, I mean, why in Hollywood? It's really the only town where things get cross-pollinated. Like, oh, the guy's a great director. We can't go to prison.
Well, yeah. Exactly. Whether
the guy runs a coin-op laundry or he directs Oscar or Academy Award-winning films, whatever that
a child.
Yeah, whatever that is, whatever crime he's committed of should just be on its own in a vacuum, right?
Exactly.
That's just a weird thing that we do that. We only do it with the arts. We don't say, oh, that guy's a great florist. He shouldn't have to. We need him out there with his arrangements.
And we do it with politicians, too.
Yeah, well, they...
Kind of. I mean,
they...
These guys do the most horrific things, and they stay in office, or they get talk shows.
Well, because nobody really gives a shit. I mean, truly. That's what they're counting on. That we just... There's not enough time in the day for us to really figure out. Like, I went and did some Dancing with the Stars thing the other day.
Right.
I met Tom DeLay, and I got a weird... like, it's like my teeth hurt when I met him. Like, God. It was a weird, you know, spray-on tan and perma-smile.
She's not gay. I am Rafer Johnson's ghost. Whatever that means.
There's something going on.
John Roberts is gay, Sam Alito's gay, Karl Rove's gay. I think that this is this gay, self-hating right-wing.
I don't know if it's
racist, faggot, fascist, homophobic.
I don't know if
this is all satire, by the way.
Yeah, so we won't get sued. The point is, I don't know if it's misplaced sort of sexuality. I mean, ultimately, we were talking about being animals a moment ago. Yeah. And it all probably goes back to the libido and that part of your brain. And, when a politician, you know, a politician can say, well, I'm against gay marriage. I'm traditional that way. And I'll go, all right. But when the guy starts really digging in with the gays and really starting to, you know, wants to introduce legislation that guys can't hold hands in public.
Yeah.
Eventually he's gay.
Exactly.
He protests too much. Methinks thou protests too much because otherwise you shouldn't give a shit.
Yeah, what is it? Your fucking business.
That's the whole point. Like, I've said this all the time. When my kid's old enough to go into scouting or go camping or away for the weekend, I want to get a group of dads in a room and I want to go, who wants to take the kids up to Mount Pinos for the weekend? And if the guy, one guy's hand flies up, you're out. Bert, get out of here. All right. Who doesn't want to take them? You? Good.
You go
because you won't.
Right.
Your hand flew up too fast, Bert. I don't trust you. And when you're like, look, here's the thing about the gays. You should, as a straight man, you should have about the same feeling about them as you have about a team that you don't really follow. Like, so be it. I hope their plane doesn't crash. Right. I don't care. I'm rooting for my team.
Exactly.
Whatever. Look, if they want to trade a quarterback or get a new mascot, I don't give a shit.
Right.
That's their business.
Great analogy.
You should be aware that they exist.
Right. They have a right to their game and their rules.
When your team plays them, you hope your team kicks shit out of them. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But there's just a team you don't follow. You didn't grow up in that town. You didn't go to that college. Who gives a shit what they're up to? And when you start protesting too much against a team you really have nothing to do with, something says you may have some of that team's colors running through your blood.
Totally. That's why these guys... You know, in the army, they're laying in the bunk and they're terrified the next guy may rape them. It's because they want it. A lot of us are partially gay.
Sure.
You know, but we don't act on it. I think everything is in everyone.
Yeah.
And whatever manifests itself, that determines our personality and our genes and everything. But we're all bisexual, I think, when we're born. You know, and to some degree, I mean, if you're a little baby is born and the only erotic experiences they have are with another person of the same sex their whole life, that's their frame of reference.
Right.
I mean, not that they have to be cured.
Well, I just said I got a boner when I started wrestling with my boy 2 weeks ago, so maybe
Well, then, you know, I should agree with you.
That's not
on
sexual.
This one.
Yeah.
No, I. It's
blood. It's a muscle. It's stimulation. You wake up with a hard on sometimes. Like, where'd that come from?
And, listen, Belzer, I just save it when I have to talk to my wife. I want you just Richard Belzer. He can explain to you what physiologically happens to a male when they start wrestling. Yeah, no, you can get a boner on a school bus if the road's bumpy enough.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there should be a website called Inappropriate Boners where people write in and say, I got a boner once when, you know, like the most, you know, my grandmother. I fucked my grandmother when I was a little kid. How weird is that?
I was watching the coverage.
Can we cut that out?
You really had a dream you banged your grandmother? Inappropriateboner.com.
Right. Let's start that.
Would be awesome because you just see somebody going like.
That was a dream.
Like,
that wasn't like a boner in conscious, waking consciousness.
Yeah. No, you'd be like.
Still weird.
I was watching the, footage of Princess Di's funeral and I started to get a boner. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, like weird. Just
yeah, I was
weird.
Watching the Challenger explode and I got a huge boner.
Now, that kind of not stuff. When the first tower went down.
No, but
this, when the second tower, I had such wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yes, inappropriateboner.com. Yeah. Guys, just be honest.
And I got to tell you, I came to my parents.
First names only.
During the Rodney King beating, I came to my parents.
That would be great.
And that was. Let's start that.
That would be great.
Inappropriateboner.com. Well, having people write into your website, you could read them on the air.
Write in. Tell us where you got your inappropriate boner. Yeah. I
don't make anything up because the real ones are.
They're the best. They're the best. You'll never do better.
Right.
I remember one time I was getting a physical for football when I was in high school. And, you know, when you're in high school. Before you finish saying the word boner, you can have a boner for no reason at all. And I was 16 or 17, and I was in the doctor's office, and he did that get into your underpants, and then I'll come back in half an hour. Like they do that thing. You know, their time is so important that they do that thing where they go, get in your underpants, and you get in your underpants.
And you stand there.
And then you just stand there in your underpants for 40 minutes while he goes out. And in between that time, three people come walking into the room. Mm. One guy's, you know, refilling the vending machine. The other, there's a nurse assistant.
Right, right.
Like there's somebody, and you're in your underpants. So I'm standing there in my underpants, and 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, Jesus.
Here it comes.
And then I thought, and then when you're 16, you can't think about it. Now, once you've thought about it, it's on. So.
Right.
So,
it's impossible when you're that old.
You know what I did?
To stop it.
I got down. I started doing push-ups. So it must have been funny when the doctor showed up. I was like sweaty and out of breath.
And you're fucking the floor.
I was like, he's trying to fuck a knot hole in the floor. But I got the thumbs up. Sorry, inappropriateboner.com. Yes.
Yeah. Here's a story I told on Howard years ago and haven't since, but it's apropos. When I was a little kid, I was thrown out of every school I ever went to, and they finally just sent me to yeshiva, Hebrew school, you know, rabbi's teacher, right? So I'm in the first grade, and the Rabbi Lazar, calls me up to the desk, and you know, when you're in first grade, you're not that tall. The desk is, you know, I guess here.
Yes, right.
So the kids are doing their work. He calls me over, and he's, you know, puts his hand down my pants. A rabbi.
Wow.
And grabs my dick. And I start getting a hard on, right? Mm. I'm going, I felt, this kind of feels good, but this is fucked up.
Right.
You know, it was just a very scary.
Right.
Because I was enjoying it, but I knew what was wrong.
Right.
And he would do that all, he would call me up like almost every day.
Why
and
you?
And fondle me.
I mean, What did he see in you somebody that?
Well, I was a wild kid. I don't know if he thought it was his way of taming me, or he, you know, I mean, clearly he was a perverted, fucked up guy.
Right.
And you know, when I told, no one believed me.
Oh, you went and told people.
I finally told my parents.
Uh huh.
And I just remember, I don't have a good memory of this. I guess psychologically, I kind of blocked that out of it. But I do remember them just refusing to believe it.
Because they were in denial,
yeah,
probably.
No, it's,
right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, this is 1950 something,
right?
You know, 1950 maybe, and no one was talking about any of this stuff. And a rabbi? You know, we know priests.
Sure.
You know, historic. But I never heard then or since a rabbi molesting a boy. Rabbis bang women. You know, right. That happens.
Yeah, through but sheets. But they don't.
No, but I mean, no, they're parishioners boys. And stuff. Some of these.
Yeah, it's weird.
But molesting a boy. And, you know, I never talked about it for years, and I forget. And then finally I told Howard, got it out of me.
Sure.
In the 80s or something, you know.
Sure.
But anyway, I don't know why.
Did it alter your sexuality in any way? Did it change you? Did it shame you? I mean, I've always kind of felt that.
Yeah, I would have to say, I think it certainly diluted and retarded my sexual development and sophistication.
Does that make sense?
The
diluted and the retarded part does, but I'm trying to think of the sophistication.
Yeah, no, that's the wrong
part.
Choice of words. But it kind of made me, now that you mentioned it, I haven't thought about it so long, you know, I thought sex was very, you know, bad and dirty for an inordinate amount of time.
Uh-huh.
Until I, you know.
Well, sometimes it can,
finally,
it can,
you know,
it can activate you. I mean, it's like you get switched on earlier than you normally would have been switched on.
Well, that's an excellent point. Yeah, it sexualized me earlier probably than I should have been. That's an excellent point.
And then what happens
with me thinking about
people either become sort of hypersexual or they sort of shut down. At least most women do. You know, usually serves either just become very promiscuous at a very young age, or you just close off and pack on the pounds and try to keep everyone away from you. You know, you
well, thank obviously God didn't for, pack the pounds on.
Yeah.
And that was Richard Belzer back in 2009. Although just 1 year prior to that, he introduced Adam to emotional support animals or service animals, and
it's so crazy we can chart that. Like, it's funny if you can think of like every single time a certain person said something to Adam for the first time, and it led to something that made millions of dollars or just hundreds of hours of ranting.
Yeah, well, I told Adam about Richard's death, and Adam's response was, first off, like, that's sad. Obviously, he was super funny. And then he thought, wait a second, is he the first guy that taught me about emotional support or service animals? And yeah, and certainly he was. So great memory by Adam. All right, that will
do. Well, Belzer, real quick, before we move on, his character, John Munch from SVU.
Yeah.
You know it didn't star in SVU, right?
No.
Homicide: Life on the Street back in 93. He played the same character on that show, a cop.
Oh, I did see that, yeah.
It went to a bunch of other things, including X-Files. He's in multiple universes. It's not quite like the Tommy Westfall universe where people are familiar. It's a long, complicated thing about all these shows that are interconnected because of the end of St. Elsewhere where the kid looks into a snow globe. Spoiler alert. But John Munch is in a bunch of different universes because that character went to a bunch of different shows. It's never heard of. It's like, hey, Richard Belzer, you know that cop you played on that one show that was pretty good? Yeah, we're going to do this other show about sex crimes. Come on and be a dildo cop. All right, cool.
Beautiful. I know. He was in so many different shows. Like, even if you try to read his credits, it was like he was in this, this, and this as the same character.
Yeah, and then also his history in comedy and like the legendary era of comedy and cocaine he's talked about on air so many times.
He does that. Yeah, we just heard
what
some
everybody
of it, right?
was doing. He told the truth about, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, yeah, he was really honest, and I think a great guest to have on any show. So rest in peace,
yeah, killer.
All right,
despite
we'll hear
Adam and the animosity about the pet thing.
That was great. I thought it was really
funny. Tell me more about his pets.
He was really funny in that interview, too. So
he was. He's always funny. Despite Adam like just sitting there like fetishistically, more about these pets.
All right, that'll do it for part one of today's episode. Stick around. Part two coming up next.